All right, welcome everybody. This is the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast, and it is Monday. It is a leap year. I didn't know that until this morning. I thought it was March, but it's not. It's February 29th. How about that?
I knew it was a leap year, but I didn't realize today was leap day until I got to work.
Well, it just means another day that we have to wait before spring training starts, but that's coming up this week. Very excited about that. I'm Adam Azer. Without Melchior, you just heard from Al. Hello, Al. Hello again.
Oh, hey, how's it going, Al?
Oh, it's going very well. And Heath Cummings here to preview Outfielders. What's up, Heath?
Hi, guys.
Oh, come on. What's wrong, Heath?
I'm a little bit grumpy today, which may make for a better podcast. I think sometimes when I'm in a bad mood,
it really helps
drive things.
Disagree. So. I'd have to disagree with that one right there.
You don't agree. Okay. Well, I wouldn't say I'm under the weather, but I feel a little under the weather.
Were you rooting for The Revenant or something? Are you disappointed about the Oscars?
I was disappointed that I had to watch the Oscars. But I didn't particularly. The problem, as I've made pretty clear, is I don't really go see movies in theaters.
Right.
So I wish they had an award show for movies that came out 5 years ago, because I would have seen some of those.
Oh, yeah. Well, why don't you start DVRing them, keeping them for 5 years? And then
DVRing
you can watch
what? Movies? I don't get
No, the
Oscars.
The Oscars.
The Oscars.
Yeah, you should have put on the 2011 Oscars.
Yeah.
I did binge watch Fuller House this weekend.
Oh, how bad was it? Oh, my God.
That's why that is now the second response, at least that I know of, that you got to that admission.
It's not that bad.
Oh, what? What?
I mean, okay, let's be clear. It's awful.
Oh, it's terrible.
But as somebody that grew up on the original, there's some comfort to watching it because it is exactly the same.
Okay. So I watched the first episode, and then we watched about 5 minutes of the second episode, and I said, no, I'm done. I'm not doing this. It is that bad. It is so bad.
I'm seven episodes in.
Heath, how? How on earth did you stomach seven episodes of Fuller House?
Well, I may have had some refreshments, which does make it more entertaining. We tried to watch one during the middle of the day on Sunday, and that didn't work near as well.
Man.
So it's probably going to be a Friday and Saturday night type thing.
Well, okay. Let's make this fancy relevant. How was Hunter Pence?
How was Hunter Pence?
Doesn't he have a guest spot on an episode?
I don't think I've gotten that episode if he does.
Thanks for spoiling it.
I just missed it. Macy Gray was
Get Out
in an episode and actually sang a song. I guess they're trying to turn Stephanie into like a music artist.
Yeah, it's really bad. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I want to talk about baseball. And
it's
Hunter,
not that bad.
Adam, I tried. I tried to get him on Hunter Pence.
It's not like Ian Desmond bad.
Hunter Pence does make a cameo apparently on it. So
can I quickly put a plug in for some of my weekend entertainment?
Yeah.
Proving that I'm truly one-dimensional. I listened to the Jonah Carey podcast for the first time.
Yeah, it's good.
He interviewed Dan Heron. It is awesome.
Oh,
you
really?
All need to go out and listen to that.
Dan Heron, okay, because it's not all sports. He has entertainment guys on there, and I had Keith Olbermann on, right? Is it Olbermann? It was one of his guys. But that's great. Jonah Carey, very popular podcast, now a CBS sports guy. He wrote an Oscars story last night about the best sports movies ever. I hadn't even heard of some of them, or maybe at least one of them I hadn't heard of. But yeah, good stuff. I did a Twitter poll over the weekend, and we will talk about Ian Desmond shortly. But my Twitter poll was just asking the people out there, who is your number one outfielder? I gave them two options, Mike Trout and Bryce Harper. And the two of you and Scott White, and this is going to be a two-part preview. Outfield and starting pitcher are going to be two-parters. Scott will be on tomorrow for part two of outfield. You all have Bryce Harper number one. Average draft position has Mike Trout number one. So I just wanted to see, where do the people fall on this? 72% of the people that responded to my Twitter poll voted for Mike Trout as their number one outfielder. And I see only one justification for your craziness.
Okay.
The only justification I can think of to put Bryce Harper ahead of Mike Trout is that the Nationals might be so much better than the Angels and would help Bryce Harper's counting stats, runs and RBIs specifically, to put him ahead of Mike Trout. Other than that, You guys are crazy.
I mean, the other justification would be that Bryce Harper was much, much, much better than Mike Trout last year.
And I will dispel that right now for the 15th time since the offseason began. But since we have new audience members now, Mike Trout was actually, believe it or not, better in fantasy in both points and roto before he hurt. It was his wrist injury, right?
Yes.
Before his wrist injury in August. If you look at him at the end of July, if you look at Trout at the end of July, he was hitting .317 and he was slightly better than Bryce Harper. And then he had a horrible August where he hit .218 and then he rebounded and hit .316 in September and was great. So he
all
was better. It was all because of a wrist injury. And I'm not going to say, and clearly one of them is more injury prone than the other. So it just boggles my mind that the three of you all have Bryce Harper ahead of Mike Trout.
Yeah, I mean, I understand about that he had a great season and that the numbers were diminished by the wrist injury. Like, I certainly agree with you that you can explain the August numbers because of the wrist injury. But I just can't discount what Harper did last year.
Oh, he's great. He's number two.
I think Scott and I don't know so much, Heath, how you feel about it. But, I mean, Scott and I think have said it every step of the way. It's a virtual coin flip.
All right,
because Trout certainly does have the greater consistency in his favor.
Well,
that's indisputable.
Okay. How about this question? Bryce Harper hit .270, .274, and .273 in his first three seasons. He hit .330 last year. What kind of batting average do you expect from Bryce Harper in 2016?
.310. .305, .310.
Okay.
What do you think about that, Al?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay, so by and large, you buy what he did last year. True breakout, and...
Well, I just said his average is going to be 10% worse.
Yeah, I expect a little regression.
Okay, but still, .310, and he's going to have a great year.
Like, in Roto, I feel like Harper's going to win runs and RBIs. If both players play 150, 160 games, Harper's going to win those two categories, simply because his offense is so... Like, Mike Trout's offense is awful.
Right, and that's a valid argument.
I feel like average is kind of a coin flip.
Mm-hmm.
Home runs, pretty much a coin flip. Stolen bases, Trout might win by a couple, but he doesn't really run anymore. So Trout has to win two coin flips to beat Harper in Roto.
But at least with Trout, like if Trout wants to steal 20 bases, he can. Harper is not going to.
But he might not feel like it.
He might not. I'm not saying I'm banking on it. All right.
It's not like I can understand after 2014 saying if Trout wants to steal 20 bases, he can because he stole 16 bases in 18 attempts. Last year, he ran 18 times again and only stole 11 bases.
I'm going to hope that that's a little bit fluky. He's only 24 years old. I don't think his skills have diminished. So
I think that certain skills of his have really, he's filling out. He's filled out, I would say. And that there's a reason that 2 years ago when he was hitting 27, 30 home runs, he was stealing 30 or 40 bases. And now he's hitting 40 home runs and he's stealing less than 20. I think that makes sense.
Okay.
And you point out the poor efficiency last year. That's the age, as Adam points out, that does make me hesitate a little in taking that super seriously. But that almost never goes well the following season.
And it's like, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I feel like his body type has pretty clearly changed in the last 3 years.
He's pretty big.
He's bigger.
Yeah, absolutely.
Bigger?
I don't think he's as fast.
A few years ago, people were freaking out because it looked like Trout was so overweight going into camp. He's a big guy. He's been a big guy. He still plays an amazing center field. I don't know. I still think he's pretty fast. But last stat that I want to throw out. Games played, Bryce Harper, 139, 118, 100. And 153 last year. That to me, that's a tiebreaker right there. I'm still worried about this guy who he plays all out. He runs in the walls. Good for him. I mean, he doesn't always run out pop-ups or anything like that, as we know. But he gets choked in the dugout. That could lead to some sort of a neck strain. No, but in all seriousness, I think the health, even though he played with a wrist injury last year, the health clearly has to favor Mike Trout.
I do want to go back because you used Trout's defense as a reason why you still think he's fast. And he really hasn't been, according to the advanced metrics, elite defensively the last 2 years.
Oh, God, really?
He wasn't even good in 2014.
Oh, really? What was he in 2015?
I mean, it depends on what number you want to use, but his UZR was 0.2. So basically just
average.
Yeah.
All right. Fine.
Okay. I'm not saying, like, when I watch him, I still feel like he's pretty good.
Yeah, me too. All right. Last question. Okay. Then we'll move on. $260 budget, five outfielder league. What's your values for Trout and Harper, or Harper and Trout?
Harper for me is 50. I'm doing this top of mind because I don't have it right in front of me here. I think I've got Trout at 49.
See, I think I have them both at the same number. I believe I've got them both at 46.
And actually, I'm sorry, did you say Roto or head-to-head?
Roto.
Because Roto, I'm sure I have them a little bit lower.
Oh, okay. So more dollar value in head-to-head because there's fewer positions.
At the top end, sure, yeah.
Okay. Quick detour from outfield to talk about Ian Desmond here, and then we'll go back to outfield. Texas signing Ian Desmond, or agreeing to a deal with Ian Desmond here on Monday. 1 year, $8 million. Not sure if it's official yet, but let's assume it is. He's going to play the outfield for the Texas Rangers. And what do you guys think about Ian Desmond now as a Texas Ranger?
Well, I told Heath this morning one of my first thoughts upon seeing the news, because we've had a big disagreement about Desmond's value going into this year, is that now I'm probably more on a par with Heath in terms of where I rank him. I'm going to drop him to probably about 11th or 12th at shortstop. And that's just largely a function of, I think his playing time is not going to be secure. It's sort of hard to know exactly what his role is. I mean, he'll play left field, but they did bring a lot of candidates into camp, and I could see him not necessarily being an everyday player.
Heath?
One of my biggest issues with Ian Desmond, besides the fact that he'd just gotten worse and worse and worse, was that he'd gotten this far into the offseason and seemingly nobody wanted him. And he made yet another player that seems to have made a mistake not accepting the qualifying offer.
Oh, yeah.
He just took half as much money as he was offered with the qualifying offer. I do think, as an $8 million player, when they've got Joey Gallo and they've got Jurickson Profar, I expect he's going to be an everyday player in April, and he's probably, no matter what happens, going to be an everyday player in May. But there's a lot of risk there.
Well, yeah.
If he's as bad as he was in the first half last year, I don't think he gets a chance to be good in the second half.
Well, yeah, because you can tolerate that kind of production from a shortstop, but from an outfielder,
mm-hmm.
it's hard to tolerate a 230 something batting average if he's as bad as he was last year. So, would you guys rather have Addison Russell or Ian Desmond?
Russell.
I believe this is funny. I think I still have Desmond ahead of Russell, but I'm not near as high on Russell as these guys are either. So,
all right, who would you rather have, Elvis Andrews or
no?
Ian
I'm
Desmond?
Sorry, I've got Russell ahead of Desmond.
All right, how about Elvis Andrews or Ian Desmond?
Desmond.
Yeah, I agree, Desmond. And that's probably exactly where I'm going to slot him in, is just ahead of Andrews and behind Marte. Maybe ahead of Marte, but somewhere in that neighborhood.
I'm probably not going to move him, and I had him right behind Azdrubal and right ahead of Jose Reyes.
Cool. Well, that's Ian Desmond for you. Scott White has a write-up on CBSSports.com, fantasynews.cbsports.com, if you want to get his perspective on Desmond to the Texas Rangers. One more note. This is about an outfielder. John Heyman reporting that Baltimore is still looking to acquire an outfielder. They were spurned by Dexter Fowler last week. So Austin Jackson, Jay Bruce, these are possibilities for the Orioles. And, you know, the only thing I can think of is without knowing too much about him, Hyun-Soo Kim is an interesting late-round pick to me, just because I feel like if he leads off for the Orioles, he'll do enough scoring runs if he gets on base to be a relevant outfielder, just like Dexter Fowler was top 20 in points, top 30 in Roto last year. But they are... The actions of the Orioles and this report does not give me much faith in Hyun-Soo Kim, guys. Like, I feel like the Orioles aren't really dead set on him being a starting outfielder for them.
Well, he still could be, because they need to fill a DH slot too. I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces there, and they could fill one, and Kim would still be the starting left fielder. But I think it still could have a big impact on his fantasy value if they do go and sign another outfielder and he remains a starter, because as of right now, he would be their leadoff hitter. When they signed him, that was the team's intention, was to have him lead off. And if they sign, you know, maybe Austin Jackson, I don't think Jay Bruce would hit leadoff, or he shouldn't, but maybe if they got Austin Jackson, they would move Kim down like they were going to do when they thought they had Fowler. And that's going to be very bad for Kim's fantasy value.
Okay. We will talk about him probably tomorrow. Today, I'm hoping that we can get through 20 outfielders or so, but more of an overview on how we view the position. On Friday, Scott and Al kind of talked about their strategy and how important it is to get an elite outfielder. Give me your overall take on the position. Al, you can talk about your 7-7 thing, which I think is really cool, but your overall take on outfield in 2016. 2015 was a much better year for outfielders than 2014. 2014, not very good. 2015 was better. We had AJ Pollock breaking out. Harper was amazing. We had a lot of guys hitting 40 home runs. Bautista, Nelson Cruz, et cetera. Chris Davis at 47. So anyway, what do you think? What's outfield look like in 2016?
Well, yeah, I do think it's a little bit better than last year, but that's really setting the bar pretty low. And you mentioned my 7-7 approach that I've been taking, which is that I see that there are 7 first basemen that I think stand out above the rest. And there's a very big drop off after the 7th. So I really want to get one of them. The drop off isn't quite as big in outfield, but I do see the 7th outfielder as being the end of that tier.
Counting Chris Davis?
And Chris, I'm double counting Chris Davis.
Okay.
So to sort of cheat. So the 7 are Harper, Trout, Stanton, McCutcheon, Bautista, Pollock, and then Davis. And then just below, my number 8 is George Springer, who I like a lot, but it's just very hard to know what you're getting with George Springer this year, because he was a very, very different hitter last year, even before he got hurt, than he had been in 2014.
Well, see, I do agree that there's a tier at that 7.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the bigger cutoff for me happens right around 12, because I like Mookie, which you don't.
Right.
I like Springer. I like Charlie Blackmon. I like Adam Jones. I like JD Martinez. And then I feel like there's this cluster of almost 10 outfielders that are just huge question marks.
So we're in agreement. It's just, yeah. I expanded the cluster and I wrote a blog post about Mookie Betts saying, is he the safe choice or the upside guy? And I think you and Scott seem as the safe choice. I perceive that that's kind of the general take on him. I see Betts as unproven and risky. So he's part of that expanded kind of high risk, high reward group that I see that I would target as the number 2 outfielder.
So Heath.
Yes.
I'm just going to give out the names again. Harper, Trout, Stanton, McCutcheon, Bautista, Pollock, Chris Davis. That's Al's 7. That's also your top 7, although you have, in Roto, you have Pollock ahead of Bautista. How's Bautista ahead of Pollock? But you include Betts, Springer, Martinez, and Blackmon. You're top 11 now, so Betts, Springer, Martinez, and Blackmon, and you're fine with those 4 being your number 1 outfielder?
Yes, I'm fine with those 4 being my number 1 outfielder. I think it's kind of weird how the cutoff is so appropriately right around 11 or 12, since that's in most leagues how many there are. Now, the thing is, you get one of those 4, you're clearly behind the position. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about that. But you're also going to be ahead at probably 2 positions, because if you're waiting that late to take an outfielder, those guys aren't. I mean, there's a big drop off also in average draft position, I feel like, between the guys that we're talking about 8 through 11 or 12.
You know, I really like Charlie Blackmon, but it's a little random here, but just talking about him, if the Rockies are smart, they're going to be sellers this year. So does that factor in? Because this guy is terrible outside of Coors Field. Like, you look at Dickerson, at least he has a respectable slash line outside of Coors Field over the last 2 seasons. Blackmon, not so much. So should that concern fantasy owners on draft day? Because here is road splits. I'll just give you a slugging percentage. It's 348 in 2014 and 395 in 2015. He's batting around 240. So should that concern fantasy owners for Charlie
Blackmon? How many years of arbitration does Blackmon have left?
I have no idea.
Because I wouldn't I get what you're saying, but I wouldn't think, if they've got a couple more years, which I believe they do, have at least 2 more years of club control, and he's only getting $3.5 million this year.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't think I would probably be – he'd be pretty low on the list of guys I wanted to trade, well behind Cargo.
Yeah, Carlos Gonzalez be a much more likely candidate.
But they may have an easier time. I would think they would have an easier time trading Blackmon.
No, I think they definitely would. But isn't that exactly the type of player you want when you're in that situation? Good, young, cheap players?
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. It just seems like he's been mentioned a lot as a potential trade target. I don't know how seriously to take that, but I've been, I guess, very conservative.
Right.
And taking it seriously. Yeah, he's not even arbitration eligible until next season.
Hmm. Well, really?
Yeah.
Then why did
that's, you know, for me, has been a big separator between him and Pollock in my rankings. The fear that Blackman's going to be traded.
So now we know who you guys are comfortable with as your number one outfielder. What about filling out the rest of the position? You know, does it change a lot in a three outfielder league versus a five outfielder league? Give me your general strategy on outfield.
Well, we just talked about how the next tier are these huge upside, but also very risky number two outfielders. And my biggest thing for those has largely been not to reach. I'm not going to reach for Nelson Cruz. I'm even Lorenzo Cain, Starling Marte. I'm not reaching for those guys. I'll take somebody at the bottom of that tier and just build my strength somewhere else.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. That's what I have been doing in most drafts so far. I'm getting a lot of Jason Hayward, who I've got ranked 22nd. And certainly it's not to say that he's without risk, because
right.
at this stage of his career, we're still not sure who he is.
You're just risking less, because you get to take him several rounds later than you have to take Upton or Marte or somebody like that.
Yeah. And I mean, and I find Hayward, you know, really, you know, I think a good value where he's going. You know, in part because he's going to be at or near the top of the, power being there, but he's still going to be near the top of the Cubs lineup. That's pretty nice.
So he's.
That might be better for Hayward not to be leading off more RBI.
Jason Hayward is the 23rd outfielder off the board according to Fantasy Pros average draft position. It does include Kyle Schwarber, so people are going to be drafting him as a catcher. So let's say he's 22nd. And last year he finished as the number 23 outfielder in points, number 22 in Roto. And yeah, Hayward's an interesting guy. He's only 26. This will be the best hitter's park he's going to have played in, right? He's been in Atlanta and St. Louis and now going to
Chicago. And the best offense.
Although the Cardinals have had pretty good offenses themselves. I don't know. I don't love Hayward because you need more home runs from your outfielders. Don't you hit 13 home runs last year? And he's only hit more than 18 once. So, I don't know. I certainly don't want him to be my number one outfielder.
Oh, no. This is my number two. And admittedly, a low end number two.
I feel like Adam's taking a number two on your number two.
No, it's being reflected in the ADP. He's going 23rd, 22nd. So here are some guys going ahead of Hayward. You've got Lorenzo Cain, Justin Upton, Adam Jones, and Ryan Braun. Your thoughts?
I have them all ranked ahead of Hayward. Okay. But it's like Keith was saying, it's just too costly in a lot of drafts to get
the
guys.
One exception to that, because I have Adam Jones, I think 12th amongst outfielders. He's going farther down the line than I think he should be. If you can get him in the fifth round, I think that's a steal.
Adam Jones, actually, the more research I did on him, the less I liked him.
Right.
Because I always sort of knew that he was not the most productive player, like per at bat or per plate appearance, but he always played a lot, right? And last year, 137 games, but still a great track record of health. But the problem with him is the steals have gone down so much that I think it's really hurting his production. So you look at his steals in the last five seasons, 12, 16, 14, at least he was giving you double digits there. For Jones, 7 steals in 2014 and 3 steals in 2015. And I guess also 27 to 30 home runs, maybe just that last year, that really wasn't that much because we had this power surge last year. I don't know what to expect this year, but if he hits 27 home runs.
Basically, he had the same. I mean, his ISO over the last 4 years, 218, 208, 188, 205. He just missed 20 games. He was the same hitter power-wise. For basically the last 4 years.
But if Jones hits 30 home runs with 7 steals.
Yeah.
I don't really think that's that good of a year.
For a fifth round outfielder, I think it's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not bad. No,
that's where I would hope to get him, is around the fifth round.
And he's quite safe. He pretty produces. You know what you're going to get from him.
And the other thing I would say is I wouldn't worry too much about his average going down last year. He's been a hitter between 280 and 287 for 5 years in a row because he had a BABIP between 304 and 328 for 5 years in a row. Last year, the BABIP fell and the average fell.
Now, in terms of strategies, going back to that, three outfielder leagues, I do find myself sometimes committing a little bit too early to outfield. I think that's a mistake because obviously there are thinner positions in a three outfielder league, but sometimes I'm just looking at the players who are available. Let's say it's like the eighth round. I'm just going back in my mind to a mock draft we did a couple months ago, and I believe I took Jacoby Ellsbury in the eighth or ninth round as my number three outfielder, and I filled my three outfield spots in the first eight or nine rounds. And on paper, like, I don't like to do that, but Ellsbury, you know, if he stays healthy, he could be really good, and you're looking at players who could be so much better than the second baseman or the shortstops or whoever you're targeting in that round. So I don't hate it, but I think in general I'd rather not get all three outfielders in the first 10 rounds in a three outfielder league. In a five outfielder league, I'll be much more aggressive.
You said that a lot last year too, and I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, I want to have the best players. I'm not going to pass on a third outfielder if I think he's a really good value just because I already have two,
right?
Especially because I've got a utility position.
But I agree with that, but you can find number three outfielders, you know, much later.
But not as good as the one that you're going to be drafting in the eighth round. I mean, yes, I can find a number three outfielder, but I don't want to be average at the position if I can be great.
I understand, but I also don't want to limit myself. And throughout the year, throughout the course of the year, there's no question in my mind, you guys tell me if you agree, there's no question that on waivers, in terms of hitters, forget pitchers, but in terms of hitters, outfielder is going to be the easiest position to fill on waivers.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I also, you know, I agree with the principle that if you get the best out value for your third outfielder as compared to the other positions that you're scanning at that point, yeah, I mean, you got to be flexible. But I'm finding in draft after draft after draft that the drop off at the other positions is going to be so much greater, at least I'm expecting it to be so much greater than an outfield. If I'm passing up on Ellsbury, just as one example, I'm finding that Curtis Granderson is dropping in so many drafts. And I mean, he had a really great season last year, and I think I don't see any reason why he can't come close to that. He's somebody that I've been able to get on the cheap. I like Cole Calhoun as the sleeper this year. He's going very, very late. Adam Eaton, who I have as a bust, is probably not going to make the next cut of the bust column for me because he's not as popular as I thought he was going to be. So there's options out there that aren't, you know, worse or that much worse than Ellsbury much later.
Yeah. Corey Dickerson, 35th outfielder off the board. I've been taking Corey Dickerson a lot. I feel like the Coors effect might be a little overrated with him. So there's just so many names. Brett Gardner, 39th outfielder off the board. Granderson, 41st. Billy Burns, 44th. Jock Peterson, 46th. What's that?
Beltran.
So how about in a five outfielder league, guys? You know, what changes?
Yeah,
there?
Different story. Then, you know, then there's a lot more urgency to grab that second and third outfielder. Very different calculus there.
And Heath, if you're in a five outfielder league, that's probably Roto or categories. So what do you think about the strategy of waiting until very late for your fifth outfielder or your utility player to take a steals guy? You know, somebody who's just going to give you 25 steals or so, like a Jerod Dyson in a deeper league.
I end up with Dyson or Burns or DeShields on a lot of my teams, it seems like, for that very reason. I think I don't know why, but I have this mental block about doing that with my utility position. Like, I have this mental block that my utility player should be somebody that hits a bunch of home runs for me. Just because I assume I view it as a DH.
Yeah, I kind of agree.
So it's usually my fifth outfielder.
Fair enough. Yep, agreed. But I'm just looking at some of these names here in Fantasy Pros, and I'm just going to look at 55 and down. Outfielders going 55th off the board among outfielders or later. So late round picks. Byron Buxton. Josh Harrison is also second and third base eligible. I don't know what he is in our leagues, but he's eligible to a lot of positions.
He's everywhere. He can play anywhere you'd like him.
Matt Holliday, Josh Reddick, Michael Conforto, Gerardo Parra is now in the Rockies, Steven Piscotty, Delino DeShields, Steven Souza, Melky Cabrera, Will Myers, Denard Span, points league extraordinaire. Some really interesting players here that I think justify waiting to fill outfield. It doesn't mean you shouldn't take some early, but don't go too early.
To be clear, all these guys you're talking about are in roto only because they're not really usable in points leagues.
I'm sure some of them will be. I mean, like Conforto and Parra, Piscotty, I could see all of those guys being usable. But they'll all be on waivers. That's the crazy thing. Or a lot of them will be on waivers in a three outfielder league, 12 teams. So that is an argument against filling that third outfield spot too early.
Even in roto?
Roto. In the points formats. That's an argument against it in points. Because those guys are waiver.
Those are guys I wouldn't want to use as the third outfielder. But yeah, I mean, there's a bounty of them that would be, you know, really great as a roto fourth outfielder.
Sure. Yeah. All right. So doing mock drafts, who are some guys that you find yourself ending up with a lot? For me, it's Corey Dickerson has been my guy. I get him pretty late. Who's, I don't know, 11th round or so. Who do you guys find yourself drafting a lot at the outfield spot?
I've mentioned two, a lot of Hayward and a lot of Granderson because they've been value so far. Yeah, I'd say those two probably more than anybody else. Also seem to be getting Matt Kemp, at least in I've had him in a few leagues, again, because I see him as actually one of the more attractive within that group of from like 8 to 20 or so that are all riddled with risk. And he's coming at a value, and he's actually got some things performance-wise to recommend him.
Earlier in the year, it was a lot of Michael Brantley for me. And now I'm getting a little bit more concerned that he's just now starting to play soft toss and I'd like for him to progress a little bit quicker. But he's a guy that is considering what he could be. Now his risk is more pronounced. It's more likely that you don't get what he could be, but he's got more upside than anybody that's being drafted around him, I feel like.
Yeah, and it's a shoulder injury, so for Brantley, and sometimes shoulder injuries can be really bad. I mean, I think Hanley Ramirez or Adrian Gonzalez or both of them dealt with decreased power because of shoulder injuries. So does that concern you, Heath, with Michael Brantley?
Yeah. Oh, it definitely concerns me as well, but you're also talking about a guy that could be a second or third round value that you can get, what, in the seventh?
Yeah. Well, 2 years ago, he was the number two outfielder in fantasy in both points and roto. And he's not a guy who's built his game on power. So that's probably a good thing, too. Any other names that you really like to draft?
Well, I mentioned before that I usually end up with one of the three of Burns, DeShields, or Dyson.
Okay.
In most every league. That's intentional. I think Burns and DeShields specifically are being way undervalued.
Al, let me throw something out about Curtis Granderson, who hit 259 last year after three straight seasons hitting between 227 and 232. He walked a ton and finished as the 13th best outfielder in points, 19th best outfielder in roto. This is Curtis Granderson. But you look at what he did on a plate appearance basis, not that good. He 0.7 fantasy points per plate appearance, which isn't bad, but worse than both Steven Piscotty and Randall Grichuk. And if you look at the overall standings where he finished, he was one fantasy point worse than Lorenzo Cain. But Lorenzo Cain averaged 0.83 fantasy points per plate appearance and Granderson 0.70. So why did Granderson have such a good season? He led off. And I think that was huge for him. He just got a lot of at-bats, a lot of plate appearances. Do you think he continues to lead off for the Mets? Or is that something that concerns you if he drops down to like fifth in the order? Would that be a concern for you?
No, not really. Because again, what he loses in terms of the opportunity to gain counting stats, I think he's going to gain some of that back in opportunities to drive in runs that he won't have in the leadoff spot. Mm-hmm. I think he probably on balance, he would be more valuable as a leadoff guy, but it's not a disaster if he moves to the middle of the order. But yeah, a lot of his appeal is, you know, certainly getting a lot of plate appearances. And, you know, that said, I mean, I would rather have Kane. It's just that Granderson, for what can provide you, so far, at least in the drafts I've been in, has been such a bargain.
Yeah, it's certainly going a lot later than Kane. All right, sleepers, breakouts, and busts here at outfield. Heath, you want to start with your favorite sleeper?
Yeah, I would like to talk about Gregory Polanco. He's a breakout, isn't he?
It does. It
Man,
really
I'm so
doesn't
bad
matter.
At figuring out who's a sleeper and who's a breakout.
Yeah, I really.
I think we're gonna go with Polanco as a breakout. So we'll okay. come back to him. Let's go with Jerod Dyson. How's that sound?
Jerod Dyson, it is.
As a deep, deep sleeper, I referenced Ray Flowers' article on him earlier in the year, and I agree with the premise. If Dyson gets the same number of at-bats as Billy Hamilton, I expect Dyson to be a more valuable fantasy commodity.
But also, to frame it, you hate Billy Hamilton. He's probably your least favorite player in fantasy.
I wouldn't say he's my least favorite player.
Okay, name someone you like less in fantasy than Billy Hamilton.
I'll make a bigger challenge to you.
Okay.
Name someone who's a worse hitter.
Actually, to be honest with you, you've pretty much convinced me not to draft Billy Hamilton.
Okay.
So I'm on board with you.
We did a fun trivia last week surrounding Billy Hamilton. And I'm going to try to remember it, Al. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But players that have gotten at least 1,000 plate appearances in their first 3 years in the big leagues and posted an on-base below 290 and an ISO below 090. And there's only two active players that have done that. And they're Billy Hamilton and Adani Echevarria.
Wow. Yeah, no, Billy Hamilton is a steal specialist,
I think,
for sure.
There was one other person that had done it in the last 20 years, and was it Cesar Esturiz?
Yes.
Yes. Basically, we were trying to find if any, like, average hitter had ever started their career that poorly. And I don't know that we found any that you'd really call average.
All right, Heath. So, yes. back to Dyson.
Okay.
How do you value him? Like, in what type of format and how many outfielders, how many teams do you think Jerod Dyson?
It's Roto only.
Okay.
I have drafted him in a standard 12 team Roto league.
Okay. Yeah, and look, he gets deals.
It's really, when you get down to that point in the outfielder rankings, I mean, I don't have him in my top 60 outfielders, but if you get to where you need a fifth outfielder and you are really low on steals, then he suddenly vaults into the top 60.
Would you rather have Odubel Herrera or Jerod Dyson?
I think I'd rather have Herrera.
Okay.
It's close. I feel like Herrera is quite obviously less likely to lose his job in July because his team made a trade for another outfielder. That's not going to happen.
Right.
And that unfortunately could happen to Dyson.
Okay, Al Melchior, who's your favorite sleeper at outfield?
Mine is Matt Kemp. I mean, I've really been pleasantly surprised at how he's dropped in a lot of drafts that I've been in. And I can understand why. He's probably gained the reputation of being really inconsistent. But over the last 2 years, he's had one really horrible month, and that was May of 2015. Just really, really awful. But if you take that out, last season, his slash line was 284, 331, 497. And his slash line from all of 2014 was 287, 346, 506. So very similar. Both seasons, again, excluding the 1 month, good batting average, above average power. And that might not be overwhelming. He's not the elite outfielder he was a few years ago, but that makes him a good number two outfielder. You just, at that point in the draft, you're going to have a hard time finding guys who are going to give you average and above, a good batting average and above average power.
Okay, Matt Kemp it is. Would you rather have Matt Kemp or Carlos Gomez?
I actually would rather have Kemp. Because he actually is safer to me, which feels weird to say, but Gomez fell off so sharply last year, and I'm just not 100% convinced that was all injury related.
I'm having some fun with Fantasy Pros right now. We'll do some more trivia. There is one expert in America that has Matt Kemp in their top 18 outfielders.
That must be me.
It is Al Melchior.
Hey,
good guess,
guy.
Al.
Now, Heath, a breakout. What do you think about Gregory Polanco? Could he be a breakout this year?
I think Gregory Polanco could be a breakout this year. I feel like Gregory Polanco is one of those players that's... Chris Towers likes to make the argument that basically by the time you're 23 or 24, you kind of are who you are. And I don't completely agree with that. And I feel like Polanco is somebody still just 24 years old that a lot of people have decided, well, that's who he is. He is going to hit 240 or 250, and he might steal you 20 bases. I feel like he profiles a guy that should have a higher BABIP than he's had. I don't see any reason that he can't be a 270 or 280 hitter, putting him in the 330, 340 on base conversation, and that probably makes him a 40 steals guy.
Would you rather have Polanco or Randall Grichuk?
Polanco.
Okay, Polanco or Curtis Granderson?
Polanco.
Even in a points league, Granderson with all those walks.
Yeah, I think I still want him. I mean, Polanco's almost, what's he been, right around 8-9% walk rate, and there's reason to believe at 24 years old there's room for growth there.
Okay. And Al, a breakout for you.
Well, I've got in my breakouts column two guys. So I'm going to sort of cheat and try to squeeze them both in here because there's breakouts who have shown great skills in different areas, but never put them all together. And then there's breakouts who, sort of like, I can't think of an outfield example, but like last year with Chris Archer, where it's just the performance never really met up to the expectations, that were set up during the prospect years. So Springer is what I would call my consolidation breakout. A guy who last year showed much better ability to make contact, to show good plate discipline, more steals. But then the year before that, not so good in those areas, but a ton of power. So if he puts that all together, he's the elite that we'd hoped he would be when he first came up. And then in terms of the guy who's kind of plotted along, you know, just below the upper levels, Christian Yelich, who maybe can make that step to have decent. I don't think he's ever going to have great power, but maybe we've had discussions in the office here. Can he be Eric Hosmer power-wise? It doesn't sound like, you know, any great shakes, but that would give Yelich a lot more value. We know he can steal. We know he can hit 300.
And they're moving in the fences at Marlins Park, so that should help, right?
It should, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and Yelich, you could probably get pretty late. I'll look up Yelich's ADP. He's the 36th outfielder off the board going at the end of the 10th round, just after Corey Dickerson. So how about this trio? Dickerson, Yelich, David Peralta. Who's your favorite in between Dickerson, Yelich, and Peralta? That's a pretty easy one for me. I'm all Corey Dickerson there.
I think I'm going to go Dickerson as well, and you're actually getting ready to move into my bust territory.
By the way, I have Yelich one spot ahead of Dickerson, but I view both of them as really superior to David Peralta.
Not feeling David Peralta, huh, Heath?
That's my bust. Okay. And I didn't really even know that, like, he was a guy I was way down on until I saw that he's being drafted at the end of the 10th round. And I don't see any reason to believe in what he did last year, the type of hitter he was. Not to say that he can't be, like, I think there's still some things he can improve on, but he's not a 300 hitter. He's not anywhere close to a 300 hitter. I think he's probably a 280 guy that maybe hits 15 to 20 home runs.
He's got some speed, though, no? He had 9 steals last year. Only 9 steals in 149 games, but he hits a lot of triples. Peralta hit 9 triples in 2014.
I don't think triples are very... Like, Evan Gaidas hit a lot of triples.
Okay, that was a total weird fluke. But for the most part, you look at the leaders in triples, and they're fast guys. Doesn't mean they're good base stealers.
Who were the leaders in triples last year?
Well, I'm just thinking consistently the leaders in triples. All right, fine. I'll look it up. All right.
I think Eddie Rosario was first or second.
Paolo Orlando led the league for most of the first half because of 3 games.
All he did was triple.
I think triples are largely kind of fluky.
Well, they can be. That's for sure. All right. Well, anyway.
I'm sorry.
Peralta. Al, you're not really feeling Peralta either?
No, yeah, actually, he was good. I know Heath wanted to talk about Peralta because that's my top bust in outfield. Also, Dexter Fowler, too, I think has some bust potential, even though he's re-signed with the Cubs, even though he's going to lead off. This is somebody who has never really been able to stay healthy. And I think for that reason alone, he might go a little too early.
I mean, you know, give me a break here. Go take a get a beer and watch some Fuller House because these are the leaders in triples. And yes, I admit some of them are kind of fluky. Eddie Rosario, Kevin Kiermaier, Rajay Davis, Evan Gaddis, Delino DeShields, David Peralta, Charlie Blackman, Billy Burns, Adam Eaton, Rougned Odor, Mookie Betts, Dexter Fowler. You got enough speedsters in there for you?
Oh, there are definitely some. There's also a guy with 0 stolen bases.
But come on, Heath,
give
me something.
It's funny that you cut it off at Ben Revere, who has 7, and left off Jason Kipnis, Ian Kinsler, Marcus Semien, who all have 7 as well.
Jason Kipnis has speed. He's been a steals guy before. Look, it's 2 years in a row. All right, fine. Okay, fine.
I'm not trying to say there's no correlation between speed and triples.
You kind of are, though.
I'm not saying there's no correlation. I'm just saying that the fact that David Peralta hit 10 triples doesn't make me think of him as a steals guy when we've never seen any evidence in his career that he's a steals guy.
Or, more to the point, think of him as a triples guy.
I also don't think of him as a triples guy.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we should. It's been 2 years in a row. But that only matters in points leagues anyway, though. Okay, that's fine with me. Al, you gave your bust Dexter Fowler?
Yes.
I think I have to disagree just because he didn't really have that good of a year last year.
What?
And, well, if you look at his slash
line. It's the best year of his career.
Right. You look at his slash line, right? It wasn't overly impressive, but he just scored so many runs and got up so many times that he was able to kind of just, again, plate appearance his way into a good season. You know, like
his average draft position right now is 197. I'm assuming that's going to be climbing because he's signed.
Yeah.
Well, I just think going to the Cubs again is going to make him a more valuable fantasy option than he probably should be, you know, just because he's not that great of a player. But what, you just don't think he's going to hit for the same power? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I don't think he's going to hit for the same power. I don't think he's going to play in as many games just based on the track record of missing a lot of time in the past.
Well, who would you guys rather have, Fowler or Peralta?
Yeah, I'd rather have Peralta.
I'd rather have Fowler.
Who do you think hits more triples?
This year? Fowler.
Fowler.
Okay. So we'll take a little look at average draft position now and see how far we get, but we have a whole other podcast tomorrow. Let's talk about those top 7. Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, Giancarlo Stanton, Andrew McCutchen. These guys are all going in the first round. In the second round, A.J. Pollock, Jose Bautista, Mookie Betts, and then Chris Davis, which gives us 8.
I don't think Mookie should be ahead of Chris Davis.
I think Chris Davis in general is going a little too late.
I would definitely rather have Mookie Betts in a points league over Chris Davis.
Okay.
But yeah, in Roto, it's a big difference. With all the strikeouts for Chris Davis, really lower his value.
Yeah, Betts obviously has a huge advantage over Davis in terms of strikeouts. But I think Davis could make that up with the power.
Well, he didn't last year, I don't think. It's also like all the doubles and triples that Betts hits, you know, because he hits a lot of triples because he's fast.
Mm-hmm.
Any concerns? I know on Friday's show we talked about McCutchen maybe not necessarily being worthy of a first-round pick, although I think we all believe he is. I think A.J. Pollock going 17th is pretty late. Are you guys totally buying into A.J. Pollock?
I don't know that I'm – I think if you're totally buying into A.J. Pollock, he should be going 4th.
Yeah, I agree.
Right? So I don't think I'm totally buying into him. I've got him right on the borderline in Roto, a first-round pick. I've got him 12th and Bautista 13th.
It's 2 years in a row for Pollock where he has slugged 498, had an on-base over 350, and hit over 300. And last
I'm going to guess there's not very many players that have put those numbers up 2 years in a row and not been great.
Yeah, I know. I kind of feel like he should be a first-round pick.
Al?
Yeah, I'm skeptical maybe of the stolen bases, and maybe there's not a good reason to be. But, you know, that was a pretty big jump for him. And I think that ultimately is what keeps me from ranking him a little bit higher. I mean, and I'm not way low on him. I mean, you and Scott Heath have him 5th among outfielders. I've got him 6th. So
you might not be way low, but you're a little too low.
I'm not too low on too low, though. You probably disagree on that. But I think it just comes down to is he going to get that many steals again? That's key to his value. But I do completely buy into him as a 300-plus hitter. He's, you know, sort of the prototype of a high BABIP guy who doesn't hit a lot of fly balls and uses the whole field. He should get 15 to 20 home runs.
Jose Bautista was the number 2 outfielder in points leagues last year, number 6 in Roto. And he walks a lot. That helps in points. And he had 110 walks to 106 strikeouts. And he only hit 250. But in 2014, he had 286. Do you think Jose Bautista is much better in points leagues, or do you think it's pretty even?
No, he's much better in points leagues. Is he also talk about, you know, prototypes of hitters? While Pollock is the high BABIP guy, I mean, Bautista is built for a low BABIP,
right?
With the opposite tendencies, pulls and fly balls. But he doesn't strike out a ton, so that's going to help him a little bit in points leagues. But the batting average will sink his value somewhat in Roto.
And the batting average, listen, I don't know that it has to be bad. It is extremely luck and BABIP dependent. But just 2014, he hit 286.
Right.
2011, he hit 302. So he has a much wider range of what his batting average could be than anybody else in that range.
Well, let's finish today's show by talking about Mookie Betts. And tomorrow, because we've talked strategy today, we've talked about the elite guys, the ones that you want to be your number one outfielder. It's a little bit deeper of a list for Heath than it is for Al. We'll have Scott on with Heath tomorrow. But Al, you have some doubts, I don't know, concerns, questions about Mookie Betts, who's a very, very trendy pick and going in the second round in fantasy drafts. So just let's talk it out. You tell me what you're thinking about Mookie Betts.
Well, yeah, it seems like he's going a little too high for somebody who hasn't, he hasn't emerged as a dominant power hitter. 21 steals last year, so he's got the speed, but he's not Pollock Blackman territory even in terms of that. And a nice batting average, and he doesn't strike out much, so you can probably count on that. But it's the power especially that worries me. And I got even more concerned when I saw him at the bottom of a leaderboard or near the bottom of a leaderboard that had some really unpowerful slap type hitters in it. And that is the ISO to the opposite field. So he doesn't have much power, hasn't had much power in the opposite field. And that was both last year and in 2014. And when you look at players over those two seasons combined, the company he's keeping on that leaderboard is very unimpressive.
Okay, I respect that. I think maybe we're counting off he was 22 years old last year, a 22-year-old that has hit 291, 348, 471 in 200 games because he doesn't hit for much power to the opposite field.
But that could be exploited.
It could be exploited to a certain extent, but it's not like he's relying on power for his value. Like, he doesn't have to have a lot of power to be valuable if he hits 290 and steals 20 to 30 bases.
Right, but does that make him, a second-round pick?
I see a guy that could be A.J. Pollock.
Right, but then he's going to have to hit 18 home runs again.
Right, he would, but he plays in a park also that lends itself pretty well to pull power for a right-handed hitter, and it does not give you a lot of advantages in opposite field power, right?
Right, right.
So we're not drafting him like A.J. Pollock. He's going at the end of the second round, right?
Well, yeah, but you're not getting both A.J. Pollock and Mookie Betts. I mean, you're going to have to choose one.
No, you're not, but you're not choosing between them either.
Well, you might have to if you want an outfielder in the second round.
No. There's
well, okay. It's a clear choice.
There's nobody saying take Mookie Betts over A.J. Pollock.
Right.
I don't think.
No,
and they're not really going at the same part of the draft.
They are
one
going
of those
at the
guys
same part
you're getting if you have a late first. The other one you're getting if you have an early first.
According to this, they're going 4.5 picks apart. I would say that's the same part of the draft. And the question is, if you don't get Pollock and you don't get Bautista, do you take Mookie Betts as your number one outfielder, or do you wait? Do you take somebody else? Do you go to a different position? Is it a tier drop off? As Al believes it is. And also, I want to correct something I said. Chris Davis did outscore Mookie Betts in points leagues last year.
To be clear, I am below. This is kind of one of those weird situations where I think Al's too low on Betts, but I'm still below the industry average and his average draft position. I think he's a really good. I think he's a great first outfielder if you're taking him early in the third round or right at the 2-3 turn. He's going just a little bit earlier than that, and I'm one of the lowest guys on him, even though I think Al's too low.
And I think that in points leagues, clearly I'd go Betts, but in roto leagues, I think I would take Springer over Betts. That would be unpopular, but I think batting average is really the only thing I see Betts beating him in.
I agree completely with that, and I do have Springer, a few spots, in fact, four spots ahead of Betts.
The only health though, maybe Al, is there a health risk with Springer? He did miss 2 months with a broken wrist last year, and
yeah, and that injury in particular is one that's troublesome, which is part of what keeps him out of my top tier. Mm-hmm.
The one other thing I would expect is I think Mookie's going to score more runs than Springer. So he gets runs, and he probably – steals might be close, but he gets average in runs, I'd say.
Well, if Betts scores more runs, Springer should have more RBIs. And I think if you take runs plus RBIs for both of them, I would give the edge to Springer. What about you?
Runs plus RBIs for both of them – I think it's probably going to be a push.
Yeah, it'd be close.
Yeah, I'll take Springer. He's going to score plenty of runs in the middle of the Astros order.
Astros going to win the World Series.
Well, I'm glad we got that out of the way. So who else could it be, Al? We know who it's not.
Could be the Cubs, maybe. But as the AL representative, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that would be very fun. Well, guys, that's going to conclude Outfield Part 1. So it's Heath and Scott tomorrow, right?
Sure.
Yep.
Cool. Al, thank you for your contributions.
You're welcome. I'll be back.
And then we'll do starting pitcher later in the week, and then we'll probably do a mailbag, and next week we'll finish the previews with relief pitcher. And hopefully by then we'll have a little more clarity on some of the bullpen races. I doubt it, but who knows. But thank you. Hope this has been helpful as we get you started with outfield. Heath Cummings, Al Melchior, good stuff. I'm Adam Azer. Happy leap year, everybody, or leap day, whatever. See you later.